Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Yeah. But I think that there's... Well, you know what? Hell, I'll just tell you what I think and we'll record it.
Okay.
It'll be awesome. So we get a level. Are you going to...
Me, mo. There's a song I can't get out of my head.
Are you going to eat Jell-O throughout the
podcast? No, only for part of it. But at least it's not like a chicken biscuit, so that's a little better.
I don't know. You know,
this is my breakfast and my lunch. I get nothing but Jell-O.
The slurp of Jell-O is the sound of death and decay. Wouldn't you say?
Wait.
Oh, wow. We are peaking.
What do you mean this? Oh.
Hold on a second. Okay. Me.
I disagree. I believe that the smell of cream corn is the sound of eventual demise.
I can see that too, yeah.
And so the one comedy gig I ever did at it was called A Home for Active Seniors, and it was a lie. These folks were not active.
Was the active part the lie?
The active part was the lie. My mom's 86. My mom's a very active senior. I mean, she needs a walker to get around. But she still goes places and does things, and she volunteers, and she drives. You know, she doesn't like to drive at night and things like that because it's hard to see. But let's face it, you know, driving at night's a pain.
I actually have a hard time driving at night right. These days.
So
at night in the rain, I think, well, I'll just stay here wherever I am.
But my friend Mike and I, Mike Carr, we went to do this gig, and we go in.
You and your car went to...
The sort of cafeteria adjacent to where we were doing the gig and sort of like the activity room smelled like cream corn. And I just turned to him and said, I smell old people. And then Mike went to go change or something in the restroom and he saw blood in the urinal, which I think is like a Sam Peckinpah Western film that never got released.
Oh, I like that.
Blood in the urinal.
I went into the Clough Lounge, not Clough Lounge, into the Clough Commons at one point, and they have those sort of stainless steel, almost, you know, modernist sort of sinks encased in the
right.
faux granite, right? So it's like this, it's this depression, you know, with a lip,
right.
And you kind of have to peek over to see into it. And I looked in, and there was this blob of bloody stuff. I mean, it had a lot more.
Thank you for sharing.
I
now shut your pie hole.
Nope, not going to do it.
Okay.
So this and this blood was sort of
congealed.
Yeah, it was a little bit congealed, but also I don't want to get too gross. Understandably,
it's really too late
already,
for that.
Okay, so I think that there was maybe some phlegm or something, so that it was this. Yeah. It was a globule
of blood mixed with other assorted bodily fluids.
Just sitting there on the edge of the stainless steel. And I remember thinking, this really is public space. Like I had this moment of going straight for the theory as opposed to the practicality of it in that moment.
But I'm pretty unabashed. However, if I left a chunk of tissue in a sink,
certainly,
I would at least make a feeble attempt to wash
right,
it down.
That should have been washed down, but wasn't. You know, and this moment, I didn't know who it was, but I knew that at some moment, someone there had actually expectorated a piece of them, you know, and that they were in trouble.
Well, maybe it was only minor trouble.
Minor trouble, major trouble.
Perhaps
I'm just
they just had oral surgery and they were seeping a little blood from
see,
their
now,
wound.
See, now we're starting to think about this moment in the sink is making me think of a whole nother life. Much like you eating Jell-O is making me think of a whole nother life. The one that tomorrow okay. involves you.
Tomorrow is colonoscopy day for me. Can we talk about that in the podcast?
I think we should. There's a
some people think that would be an inappropriate topic.
No, there's a lot of getting old and not being able to do what you used to do and sort of opening yourself up to ignorance kind of stuff for us to talk about today.
But I think perspective is everything. I think you sometimes end up and actually I'm going to reference a friend of mine who I shall not mention because I don't want to give away personal things. She
others,
had a...
Others' personal things.
Well, no, she had a health scare a few years ago. And just said, life's too short, you know, enjoy it. Live, love, laugh, eat, pray, love, whatever the heck the movie is. And other
I
people are just too
that
uptight.
That's not a good book, though.
I didn't read the book. But okay. I'm just saying, your perspective changes. So food is first and foremost on my mind. because I'm only allowed to consume liquids and things that will be converted into a liquid like Jell-O in your gastrointestinal tract. And then here's the killer. They tell you you can't have any purple or red Jell-O because if that dye shows up, it might look like blood.
Have you had one of these before? Have you had a colonoscopy
No,
before?
I just turned 51 and it's taken a while for me to schedule it. But yeah, when you turn 50, this is when you get it.
And they're looking for cancer. Is that the main thing?
Well, I mean, cancer is one of them, tumors, polyps, you know, right. Any sort of abnormality. And ironically, the folks that work with the imaging in the National Institutes of Health, and we have some folks on campus here as well who do this, you can take an MRI of your abdomen and reconstitute your entire colon via the magic of, you know, mathematical transforms. And they literally do what's called a colon fly-through, where they can virtually just fly through your colon.
Why are you not getting an MRI?
You know, that's a good question. The colonoscopy just might still be a little more accurate, and that's no dig against the folks that work on these mathematical transforms and the MRI guys. They're working on that to make it better and better every day. And this was several years ago when I talked with an expert on this. So who knows? Maybe it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But the big disadvantage is if you're in there with the TV camera up your butt, that arthroscopic device also probably has some little aspirating needle or pinchers, so they can remove a biopsy if they see anything that looks weird.
How much thought have you put into this building up to it? Have you like really gotten into the whole, okay, there's a thing that's going to be inside me and sort of freaked yourself out about it? Or are you kind of staying out of it as a
You sound like a counselor prepping me for prison, you know, physical assault or something. Like, well, Pete, just relax and go to your happy place. No, I put very little thought into it. However, I will say this, that the Colon Prep Center of Atlanta has hounded me for months. No, and in a good way. So they sent me an email today. Oh, uh-huh. It's tomorrow. Get there 45 minutes before and none of this and none of that.
They don't want you to ignore it and disappear.
But they sent me something, you know, several months in advance where I could just click a button and order my colon prep supplies online.
Is that Jell-O?
No, Jell-O is what they recommend. Basically, I can't eat any solid food today, which means I'm going to be in a piss poor mood.
What's a colon prep supply, though? Is that like...
Well, it depends. It depends on what they do. And my friend, Dr. Tannenbaum, who does this imaging stuff, the way he described it on my radio show was, well, they give you this stuff called go lightly, and it makes you go very, very heavily. Okay, I'm not doing his New York accent well,
but it
sounds better in a New York accent.
Here's why I asked you that question about, like, have you thought about it? Is because I had a liver ultrasound recently.
Can I ask you how that went?
Yeah, totally. But I'm gonna stretch it out. My family knows how it went, so I'm gonna stretch this out just for the narrative joy.
Okay.
And I put a lot of thought into this ultrasound coming. Now, obviously, it was not invasive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were gonna look at one of my organs that they thought might be having some problems.
Right.
You know, and so I was picturing
it gives you pause.
Yes. And claws, and the hair on the back of my neck stood up. I guess that's sort of a dog joke. I thought over and over, like, what would it be like if I'm looking out of the corner of my eye and there's a big black spot, you know, in the image of the liver that I'm looking at?
Do you get to watch the TV as it happens?
I did watch it. And very quick,
da, da, da.
Very quickly, I realized that I had no idea what the hell was happening. Because do you know those squids that can turn themselves inside out? It's like something infernalis. Have you seen these?
Whatever you say.
There's a little squid. It can turn itself inside out. You know, that's what my liver looked like on the the imaging. It looked like there was a hole that my liver was traveling into, like a torus. You know.
Right, because as they move the ultrasound, they can change the depth.
And so I had no idea what I was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
If I had gone with what I was seeing for my liver, then I have a hyperactive sea slug for a liver.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Some mornings.
And he has a name, Sammy the Sea Slug.
So they ultrasounded my liver. Is that the proper conjugation?
I don't think ultrasound is a verb. Although we use a lot of things as verbs, though.
So. Yeah, I think ultrasounding is a thing we should start saying.
Sounding is a verb,
right? So if the sound is ultra, then you ultrasounded.
Okay,
wouldn't you say?
It's not just sounding; it's ultrasounding. New this fall from Touchstone Pictures, Charlie and His Liver together again.
I'm coining it right now. So I was prepping. I was saying to myself and to others that okay. So the worst this could be. I mean, this is where they say, oh, there's a tumor.
Right.
That's the bad result. And the easy result is, nothing seems wrong. Although that would also be a bad result because then they would say, we still don't know why this particular symptom is going on, so we're going to have to go on to the next thing. So they looked at my liver, or they listened to my liver in a way.
Technically, yes.
And I have a fatty liver.
Okay.
Diet and exercise. I mean, it's the,
So that's the good news.
Yeah. I'm diet American. I have a fatty liver.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to deal with that. It was a bit of a letdown to not have some terrible thing wrong that they had to stick a needle into me about.
Hey, you're freaking me out now, man. Well, isn't good news good news still?
There was discussion of a biopsy if they had to.
That's
right?
The next step. Yeah.
And they don't have to. Let me make that clear. But,
and you should always lead with that, by the way, because I tell jokes on stage about me getting a prostate exam that was irregular and having to get a prostate biopsy. Yeah. And I always preface it by saying, okay, I'm going to tell you this story. It's very, very funny. But first, let me tell you that
everything's okay.
Everything's okay. The prostate biopsy was negative, because if you didn't know that everything was okay, you might feel uncomfortable laughing at me telling jokes about a man with a white lab coat with his finger up my ass. You'd still laugh, but you'd feel uncomfortable.
Shouldn't they feel uncomfortable, though?
No, I don't think so.
Isn't comedy something you do to people?
Well, the funny thing is to laugh at the common reaction to common uncomfortable situations. And modern medicine is a prime target, because they stick stuff in you, and it's just embarrassing, and we should laugh at about it.
My embarrassing thing about the ultrasound is that when it was over, I'm a hairy guy, and when it was over, I had that gel all over me.
Ooh, do you know what I had? I've had two ultrasounds. One of my heart, so they call that an echocardiogram, because I have a minor, heart murmur.
Okay.
And the other is when you have an irregular prostate, they do an ultrasound of your bladder.
Yeah.
And that's a good story in and of itself.
They checked my liver, my pancreas, and one of my kidneys.
Okay, only one? They figured, well, the last one he's on is
She said, the ultrasound technician said, when we do a liver, we do the right quadrant.
Oh, okay, so you're checking the kidney on that side.
So if my left kidney is totally messed up, they didn't notice.
So if somebody ever sedates you to rob your kidney, hope they take the left one, because you know the right one's good.
That's right. So lead with the left, so they think they feel sort of. So, yeah, I was, I had myself ready for the worst. And then when it was not even close to the worst, there was sort of a certain amount of preparatory dread that had no discharge.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm saying it was almost a letdown that there wasn't a next step.
So I see what you're saying. There's two preps you need to make. Mine is extremely invasive. So the prep I need to make is for the test itself.
You've got to physically prepare yourself.
That's what worries me the most. Have I even thought about whether or not they find a polyp or a tumor or something? No, but I mean, I realize that's a distinct possibility.
This
I
is
hope
a totally,
they don't.
Yeah, this is a totally speculative test also. This is just, you are at this age.
Yeah, so there is no probable cause. Right. But
except for
we're just going
you
by the
having
age
lived
thing.
A certain long time.
And they're like, you turn 50, get the flashlight up your butt.
You know how people always say, people who were in the olden times, they died at like 30 or something like that. I always think of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. Weren't they quite old compared to the...
Yeah, but weren't they in their like their 60s or their 70s, right?
So that's not quite old anymore.
Right, you died of the gout or something. Whereas the other people that died in their 20s and 30s, they got like eaten by a bear. Or
There's
worse yet,
right.
they were out with the plow.
They got cut by a bear, got away, but
and
then
they
died
of sepsis or some infection. You're right. Literally, we take it for granted. You cut yourself on a jagged edge of something, and
then it's a cool story.
And they just died a month later. So hats off to Dr. Lister.
Lister for Listerine.
All right, are we going to talk about anything relevant, or are we going to...
Wouldn't you say we already have started talking about things that are relevant to the consilience of science and
the humanities? My colonoscopy is not relevant.
We are talking about each of us being the material that scientific inquiry was perpetrated upon.
Really?
Are we not?
Right, are you talking about the field of medicine there?
Not even the field. I'm saying that we're being looked inside.
Yeah. Yes, to boldly go where no arthroscopic camera has gone
before.
That's
something that is very recent in human existence. To be able to check out. They checked my liver to see if it was okay, and they said, it's fatty, so you need to change your diet. Mm-hmm. I mean, how long has that been happening? Not fatty livers. I assume that everyone had a fatty liver.
Right, but only rich people had fatty livers 300 years ago.
But like, how long has it been that you could diagnose something like that? How long has it been since we could say, oh, you know, we're going to do this camera check on you just to check now for polyps and cancer and tears and whatever else?
Well, to me, the juxtaposition of science and humanities for that one is, you know, science does the investigation and the interpretation, and humanities is kind of responsible for two things. One, the ethics behind that.
Nice.
And then two, the human science interface. And the human science interface for medicine changes all the time.
So why don't you go ahead and explain yourself, the human science interface?
You know, so you have scientists and biomedical engineers and other related engineers working with physicians to come up with what the best diagnostic tests are. And sometimes the diagnostic tests are just some additional, you know, like the prostate-specific antibody, which is something that most men over a certain age always get done in their blood work.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, for many, many years, people have come in and taken a tube of blood. And we did, you know, the amount of hemoglobin.
They took six on my last physical.
Actually, they take a lot more now because they have a lot more tests. A
lot more tests.
Right? But for someone to say, well, they used to take one tube and now they take several, it's not so bad. Provided you have a practitioner, what do you call someone that takes blood? Phlebotomist?
That's pretty good. I like that.
Or a medical technician.
A Clough Common Sink.
Yes, exactly. And ironically, a lot of people don't know that doctors and even nurses don't do that a lot. They're not particularly good at it.
Yeah, I go to Kaiser, and in the facility that I go to for my regular stuff, mm-hmm. there is a completely separate person who I never see.
Yeah, and that's the medical technician.
She comes in and she tells me a story about her kids who live in Ohio, uh-huh. and then she tells me to squeeze,
yeah,
and then let go, and then she fills six vials with my blood.
And was it painful?
There's always just that little pinch.
Well, the pinch is the beginning. But what about when she changed tubes?
No, there's this thing, and they you know, it snaps right back
but
in.
But believe it or not, when you're holding the little needle part, if you're not good at it, it can not be good.
Well, I will tell you something then. She is awesome.
Yeah. If you have a good medical technician, and these are folks typically with a 2-year degree that are often underappreciated and taken for granted.
I'm going to send her a Christmas card.
But if you have a technician who can change six tubes and you don't feel it, trust me, that is an extremely valuable skill that many doctors and nurses even nowadays don't have. My wife's pretty good at that because she works in a practice where when she works weekends, she's the only medical person there. So she's got to do everything from medical assistant all the way up through nurse practitioner, which really bumps into examinations and what doctors do. So that's very important. So the point is, if the test is just a new high-tech, you know, the prostate-specific antibody, and they just take a couple more things of blood, nobody cares. They're like, okay. But then when we started doing, you know, we didn't always do prostate exams.
Every time you say prostate, I think most men die with prostate cancer, not of
it
prostate
is a big
cancer.
Oh, what do you mean?
This was something the doctor told me. Most men, we didn't have percentages, we're just talking. Most men, when they die, they have prostate cancer.
At some stage or another.
Yeah, the very few, relatively, mm-hmm. men die of prostate cancer.
Right.
But it would seem that that's just what we get now. We live long enough,
But that's true in general.
Your prostate goes nuts.
So
and you have it.
I interviewed
on the way out
the oncologist at Emory University.
There might be something awful happening in your pants right now.
Well, not necessarily my pants. It could be anywhere. Most old people have some level of cancer. They have some level of cancer here and there. So it doesn't matter what it is. It could be pancreatic cancer. It could be something like that. And these take years to develop.
Pancreatic doesn't just sort of sit around, though. That's an aggressive one, is it not?
The aggressive version of it does not.
There's a placid pancreatic cancer that just sort of hangs out?
I cannot speak intelligently on the aggravated degrees of pancreatic cancer. All I can say is, you know, there are a lot of theories where people believe that cancerous cells pop up all the time.
Is that like Soylent Green? Cancerous cells?
No. How do you get Soylent Green? Cancer is people. No.
Because Soylent Green is people, so cancer is cells. I'm saying, is that the sort of declaration?
No, cancer is cells.
Cancer is something different than we thought it was.
Right, and your immune system can deal with some of that, and when it gets, you know, when it outpaces your immune system, then you have problems. Some of those problems we can catch early, and we can fix with surgery. We can fix with other drugs, chemotherapy, radiation. You're eventually going to die of cancer no matter what, and you're probably going to have
unless you're eaten by a bear.
Unless you're eaten by a bear. So the truth is,
would you rather cancer or getting eaten by a bear?
That's a tough question. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one.
No, I don't think we can let that happen.
But in the Middle Ages,
Pete. I will not let this podcast
continue. We didn't see cancer, right?
Until
cancer
you tell me. No, stop it. Stop it. Cancer or getting eaten by a bear? You got to decide right now.
I'm going to go with cancer, Chuck, because getting eaten by a bear sounds horrible.
And cancer not?
No, but cancer, at least in modern times, you know it's coming. You see it. You can, and much like my colonoscopy tomorrow, lots of good drugs. So if you're bedridden and they give you that little morphine switch.
You know what I would really enjoy?
What?
Being bedridden with cancer and getting eaten by a bear.
Simultaneously?
Just so I could think about, that was a Jell-O talk. Just so I could think about what the headlines would be. Yeah, right?
Okay.
You know what I found out about recently?
I don't mind my carcass being devoured by a bear, but. I want to.
Well, I mean, you'll die quick. I found out recently that metabolic syndrome is essentially the description of being sedentary and eating too much fatty food.
Mm, right.
Like we have a name now for
fat dudes.
For just kind of being just being lackadaisical about your health.
Well, that's just something that speaks volumes about the way academics work. I mean, you can't call it a truly scholarly endeavor unless you give it a cool acronym or a cool name.
You love the jargon question.
Yeah, and we do way too much jargon, and this is why people think we're a bunch of tools.
That
doesn't mean you can't use the jargon when you publish in your profession. That's exactly why, and there is no other reason. But I mean, you could say, look, you're sedentary, you're a fat slob. Get up and exercise and stop eating so many... You know, corn-based processed snacks. I don't care how many taco flavor things.
But nothing else tastes like bacon, except for bacon. That's a Louis C.K. joke.
I tasted
that
a bacon
off.
Beer when I was in Providence, Rhode Island.
What?
Yeah, they have a beer with bacon.
Wouldn't you say the bacon thing has gotten out of control? Maybe no more bacon flavors in other things.
I don't really care. I don't judge like you. You're very petty that way.
Am I petty?
No, but
it's my fatty liver.
Back about this interface, though. Now that we have prostate exams,
the human science interface is that a metaphor or is that like a description of actual tools? Is that a way that people interact with each other? What's that describing?
Well, but as medical science changes, you have to decide: will people tolerate the interface? Right. So, for example, radiation and chemotherapy is the modern, much more efficient, effective, and targeted version of leeches.
Slow down.
In the old days, they thought, well, if you were sick, you had bad blood. So they would remove the bad blood. So but put leeches
on you. They didn't actually know. Did they think that leeches went for bad blood? Like the,
you know, I don't know. I don't know whether they thought less blood would be good or leeches targeted the bad blood.
We'll take out some blood. You'll make some new blood. Is that the sort of thing?
Well, you do make new blood.
But yeah, I'm not saying that they were all wrong.
It was not the craziest theory in the world.
Well, that is not a good trophy.
But had they tested it with a real hypothesis, then they would have realized, had they done, they would have realized there was really no correlation as to your survivor rate with leeches. And they would have said, okay, maybe leeches are having no
effect.
And
in fact, more leeches maybe equal less survival rate, lower survival rate.
There might be, yeah. However, if you had a clotting problem, it might be, so leeches are very good at producing an anticoagulant.
So that they don't kill.
That keeps the blood flowing. Yeah. Keeps the blood flowing. Now, I don't know if that anticoagulant diffuses through the bloodstream or just stays local. But leeches actually are miracles of biochemistry. They're actually fascinating. For example, electroconvulsive therapy, which is used extensively in the United States, you know, like in the 40s and 50s.
Shock therapy.
They still use it today. And it helps certain disorders. And it really calms patients, and it really has a therapeutic effect. And they still argue about why. Some people may think they have the answer. But you can see that, you know, electrical stimulation of the brain may have some effect. And it, for these certain diseases, these mental diseases, it does. So they use it on a limited basis, and they don't know why it works.
Where's the human science interface coming in on this?
Well, the human science interface is, would you let someone hook electrodes to your head and shock the crap out of you?
Was it not forcible most of the time?
Sometimes it is, but today it's not always forcible. So today we're much bigger on something called informed consent.
Once
again,
you're reminding me of other conversations and a 70s movie, because all I can think of now is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I'm having the worst time, though, because all I can think of is that Jack Nicholson's name was McNulty, which it was not, because that's the dude from The Wire. But now McNulty has taken over, because it's McNutty by Bubbles, you know?
Right.
And what was the name of the character that Jack Nicholson played?
I don't remember. I haven't seen the movie for years. All I know is I can't get that Little Mermaid song out of my head.
It's not McManus. That's somebody else. It's McGinn. No.
Oh, I'm thinking of adapting it to talk about engineers.
This is terrible. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
No, the Little Mermaid song. You know where she sings about being up there where the people are?
I have to look up One Flew Over the
Cuckoo's Nest. I think I'm going to modify it and make it.
Before I die.
I want to be where the people are normal. And I'm talking about not engineers. All I got is one line. I'm still working on that one.
McMurphy.
McMurphy.
Oh, I was dying there. So, you know, McMurphy, he eventually is shocked a second time. Mm-hmm. And he's fried, and Chief spoiler alert, Chief suffocates him,
right.
Throws a sink out the window.
And runs.
But many of the folks in there, especially Christopher Lloyd, Danny DeVito, right, they mm-hmm. said they were in there on purpose. He had been, McMurphy had been forcibly
committed,
yeah.
But many of the rest of the crazier people voluntarily
right.
committed themselves.
Because he wasn't crazy, he was just outlaw.
Just pissed off, yeah.
Yeah.
He was bitter and angry. Much like us.
Did he cut the heads off of parking meters? No. That was Cool Hand Luke.
All right. But so the point is, compliance is the issue. And my colleague, Mark Prausnitz, works on drug delivery methods because he worries about compliance of people taking their medication. And let's think about it. To take a pill, that's not that tough. Even to get an injection. But that's a little tougher, so you'd rather deliver it another way. But imagine this. Somebody sticking their finger up your butt. A flashlight up your butt for a colonoscopy. We didn't always do...
Isn't it more of a submarine that's going...
Well, it's kind of like a snake. We didn't always do pap smears. That's an extremely invasive test. And probably the most crazy-ass one I've heard recently, which has scientific studies on its side that say it could be a very good thing. And it's just so gross and disgusting, like leeches, that you're mm-hmm. like, how do you get people to comply? And it is an infinite source of humorous fodder for comedians. I'm still working on a joke about this one. And that would be fecal transplants.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah, get the gut bacteria
right.
from one
yeah,
gut to the
so
next.
So the balance of bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract is a very touchy thing. And that's why we will ingest a lot of active cultures, yogurts. I think the local dairy, what's the local dairy around here that sells milk in the orange containers?
Okay.
But in any case, their 2% milk has cultures in it. And it's supposed to balance that sort of thing. And by the way, it's not just in your gut. It can actually be in your uterus. It can actually be in other areas of your body where you have to balance these microorganisms. So if you have real, real problems and you can't fix it with one of the other means, they literally take poop from a normal, healthy person where that balance is good and stick the poop up your ass. I mean, come on. Who doesn't just... Everyone goes a little Charles Nelson rally.
Do I have to make a count of how many times you said up your ass or up your butt? I think I might have to... We're going to have to put explicit on this one.
No, that's a very visceral... If your doctor... Well, I've got bad news. This procedure will involve something up your butt. Doesn't your sphincter clench a little when you hear that?
It hasn't been because I'm sort of getting ready for my own, mm-hmm. you know... I'm 40. My liver is fatty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired most of the time.
Maybe it's because you got fatty liver. Shouldn't you take Geritol? Isn't that what that's for?
Exactly. This is where I'm at, right? Mm-hmm. So I know it's like, okay, prostate exam, colonoscopies. There's probably a hernia in my near future.
I hope not.
Well.
Do you exercise?
Not as much as I would like to.
It's hard to find time.
It is hard to find time. When I was a young man and callow, I would say, well, I've just been so busy. That's why I haven't written anybody. Because it was back when you wrote letters. Or, I've been real busy. Sorry we haven't hung out. What an asshole, right? I had oceans of time for other people and mm-hmm. myself. You know? But now there's no extra. I don't have... If I had just put myself to work during all that extra time I had before I had mm-hmm. a kid... I could be president right now.
I don't think so, dude. I hate to burst your bubble.
Thanks for your vote, sir.
You need a little luck to be president.
I don't have any of that. I'm done. I used it all up.
But what's interesting is, and this was something that Don Norman sort of accused us academics of being. We're very siloed, right? We're an expert in our opinion, and we're not so much another, which isn't necessarily a good thing. And we don't always look to other folks. We're like, well, we're the expert. We're in charge. We should know better. But you don't. You need to your ego away and look at what other people do. And sometimes the best suggestion comes from the freshman undergraduate student.
Do you feel like you do that? Do you feel like you silo yourself
away? I think I do that less than most people. But I really despise people, whether administrators, academics, teachers, whatever, here at Georgia Tech, who say, you know, unless you have a PhD, I'm not going to listen to you. That's real dangerous. And here's a good example about your exercise thing. You know, I am not a hawk. I'm not a big fan of the United States wielding its military might whenever it feels like it. But
what territory have we stumbled into here?
We've stumbled into the military. The military, you know, I don't like their chain of command thing, right? We've had a lot of sexual assaults, particularly of women in the military, and they're like, we can handle it internally. And I'm like, no, dude, you're not objective. You need to have something maybe be objective through the Justice Department. But some of the things the military does, and you know, liberal college professors like me, they don't want to admit that the United States Department of Defense does anything good. They're a bunch of hawks. And that's a load of crap. There are hundreds of things in terms of policy and practice that the United States military does extremely well. These are the guys that can move into a town and build a bridge in 8 hours. So as an engineer, the way they do some of this quick stuff, absolutely fabulous. The Army Corps of Engineers, we should just do a show on them. They're totally cool. But here's the deal. Do you know why less people in the military are fat with fatty livers? Like us lazy academics?
From what I understand, there's a thing called boot camp, which people are trying to recreate
outside
of the military.
Even the career officers, they get something called PT, physical training. And my understanding is they get like, it's scheduled. They schedule an hour a day. It's in your schedule. In fact, if you don't take your hour and go running or go to the gym
but
do what you do.
Yes, but as civilians,
right,
we also are able to put an hour of physical training into our schedule if we wish. We just don't.
But I think the military so strongly encourages that it's basically...
Culturally, it suggests...
It's basically mandatory.
Here's the thing. I feel embarrassed to you know, leave work for an hour and work out and then take a shower and then come back.
Why do you feel embarrassed by that?
Maybe not embarrassed. I just don't want to deal with the hassle of taking my clothes off and putting them back on again. I know.
Do we have a problem in that arena?
This is a problem. No. I mean, you know what? A little bit, because I've had athlete's foot in the past, and it's not a joke. It's not something to just be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so have I. There's antifungal sprays for that. What's your problem?
See, what did I say? It's not a joke. And you went right for the joke.
Are you saying we can't make a joke about athlete's foot?
No, I'm just saying that athlete's foot sounds funny. Just like someone saying, yeah, I got a little jock itch. It sounds funny, but it's awful.
It can really get bad.
Yeah. And it's just the thought of having to do the same thing that I do in the morning to, like, prepare myself. It's weird. I think I connect that bleary, the day's about to start kind of feeling with showering and dressing and all that.
But you just change
it. And so I don't
want
to redo it.
I come in and sometimes will not shower and then run sometime in the morning and then shower after that. I have a razor. Sometimes that's when I'll shave, too.
Yeah.
So I just... that's what I'm saying. The military builds that in. Why doesn't society build that in? We could save billions in healthcare, including the ultrasound for your fatty ass liver.
There is no liver in my ass. Liver is much higher than everyone thinks. Have you noticed that?
I know, but it's fatty ass. It was awesome.
A colloquialism. Where's your liver?
Where is my liver? Okay, let me try to remember. It's on my right side, right?
I think it's all the way across, dude.
But the pointy end is here, and it goes like this.
Yeah, that's probably right.
And it's actually under my rib cage.
Yeah, because right quadrant.
Yeah,
exactly
it's
right.
It's up there.
Yeah.
It's not, people think it's down here. No, that's all intestines and your...
I always thought my liver was my kidneys, basically.
Yeah, your kidneys are in the back.
I know they're in the back, but I thought your liver was down there, too, with the other thing washing.
Why was
the blood.
I able to, one, properly describe where your liver is, and two, when the nice lady at the urologist, when I had an abnormal prostate exam, when she says... Okay, this is one of my favorite jokes to tell. She's like, okay, pull your pants down a little bit. Don't you think that's a loaded question? Because, I mean, you pull them down.
You're about to find out what someone thinks a little bit is.
You don't pull them down enough, and suddenly you're a wiener. And if you pull them down too much, the entire film crew from To Catch a Predator comes racing in and like, all right, sir, why did you? But then she said, we're going to take an ultrasound of your bladder. And your bladder is actually quite low, so you can pull it down and just above your junk, and you're okay.
Sort of a surfer kind of hemline.
And then they do...
Or True Blood.
Then they do your... then they put that conductive jelly.
Yeah.
And it gets mixed in your chest hair and your pubic hair, and you're just like, oh, God, this cannot end well. And then she's pulling out... She's got a box of Kleenex. She's pulling out, like, six Kleenexes.
Right, you're going to need this after.
Right. So I put my hand out, like, please deposit said Kleenexes in my hand. And she goes, oh, no, I'll take care of it. And I'm like, I'm confused, ma'am, because this is not the back room of the Claremont Lounge, nor do I think my insurance actually pays for that.
So let's take this either up or down a notch, whichever you want to call it.
Okay.
I want to go back again. I feel like we're talking about the human body and, in fact, ourselves being the subject of scientific inquiry.
Right.
In the sense that...
in scientific practice. Once it's a diagnostic tool, it's
practice. Scientific inquiry, I really mean scientific practice. You know, these investigative techniques and tools are being used on us.
Right.
Or inside us or around us, right? And it's a little bit weird. Doesn't it feel a little bit weird?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And that leads to the compliance issue. There are many people that will not get a pap smear, a prostate exam, a colonoscopy, because they're like, here's their reason why. Ew, that's it.
So make the leap now. I mean, is this why some people have a problem with science? Because science is, by nature, invasive. And when they imagine it...
Ooh, I never thought about it that way.
This is where I'm going.
Well, of course, that's an excellent query.
We have just a little time left today. You want to answer this question? You want to try and get in there?
But it's the personal thing.
I think it's very hard for people to not be personal about it. When you think about what people do, it's either, you know, when folks want to wage war, they are making whoever's the war is being waged upon, they are the other, right?
Right.
You don't think... go bomb my brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. You think go bomb those people who are not me, right?
But in fact, if you travel the world, you realize people are much more alike than they are different.
Absolutely. And, you know, except for that one country, whichever one you don't like.
Right. Then I don't think there's any country I don't like.
You know what? I will accept your derailment.
That's okay. You can get back on the rails.
I've only been to 4 countries.
I've been to a few more than that, but I even enjoy my time in Saudi Arabia.
You enjoyed your time there. Did you enjoy the country itself?
Well, is the country the people?
Is there a rodent of unusual size in the corner of the studio?
No, I think somebody's banging doors back there in the other part of the studio. A rodent of unusual... That sounds like a play.
Recently, someone who went by the alias Dread Pirate Roberts was arrested, and so Princess Bride is back in my mind.
Okay. Oh, you're right. That's the line for that. Well, so for example, it's not even just the procedures. Sometimes it's just the questions.
Oh, are we back on the rails? Okay.
Yeah, we're back on the rails. So it's the question. So I mortally offended this lovely woman who runs an organization.
That's just a Tuesday for you, though.
Yeah, that's a Tuesday for me. Because we were talking about kids and marriage and things like that, and I was pulling what my wife does. My wife's an infertility expert. So if you're thinking of kids and you're pushing 40, it gets a little more difficult. But you have lots of options. You have donor eggs. You have adoption. And actually, myself and another person at the table had an adopted child. And I was just trying to say, you know, these are your options. So you can have kids, not have kids. If you want to have kids, you can still have them. You have other routes. It's all good. To me, it was all informational. This is how scientists and engineers
I think see where this is going.
Physicians have a slightly better view because hopefully a good physician knows how to talk to a patient.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're either a scientist or an engineer or a physician with bad bedside manner, you do something like I did right in the middle of, did we have a Syrah? It was an Italian meal. And I ordered a Syrah from California. It was actually quite good. And I thought, well, you know, people have had a glass of wine. You can talk. And I asked her how old she was, and oh, did I get my ass kicked? And I did not mean to offend.
Did you? You were asking how old because you felt that would better clarify her options?
Yes. I was trying to frame her options.
Did you not think for a moment that some people don't like to be asked that?
I did, but it's the 21st century. Do we really worry about that stuff anymore?
Surely there are things that offend you.
Not much.
When was the last time you were offended?
I mean, I get annoyed a lot, you know, like in traffic when people are going too fast or too slow or something like that. I don't know. I guess I like the quote from C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity, even though I'm not a particularly religious person. And he said that he believes God judges you by your intentions. I try to judge other people that way. So if somebody asked me sort of an embarrassing question, was to help
me. God does judge by intentions.
But other people
will
kick your
ass. However, we're talking about people.
Yeah.
It's not your place to ask the other person to think of what God would do.
Yeah, and I know approximately how old this woman is, and she could easily pass for someone 5 to 8 years younger than that. Because unlike you, she exercises and is in good shape.
Are you trying to get a rise out of me, Agent Coolion?
No. I just, I don't know. I didn't mean anything by that.
So think about that. All right, so this.
No,
this,
but you're right. My kids make ball jokes about me, and I'm not offended by that because I am
whatever,
bald.
Yeah.
And neither are you. But the guys on CNN and Congress who do the comb
but
over.
But some people seem to think that bald is bad, and so they, you know, they use it as a weapon.
Yeah, so if someone's trying to make me cry, I say, well, you're bald and ugly. I'm like, well, that's what my wife says every week. I've simply accepted that. But at least I'm charming and sometimes funny. So I got that going for me.
Pete, are you all right? Let me take your temperature. So think about that sort of just a question, you know, a question about age offended someone. And now the idea that, you know, being touched or being penetrated is must be offensive, must be unsettling. I'm trying to think of a word. Apocalyptic for some people, right?
Wow.
And then it's connected to science. It is science. How would you approach someone who had that problem with the scientific method or the nature of science. Someone who might suggest that it's unnatural to dismantle the world and try and figure out how it works.
Yeah, that would make them not like medicine and not like science. Absolutely. And let's face it, this has existed for hundreds or thousands of years, right? I mean,
that feeling you mean? That
well, we knew so little.
Resistance.
We knew so little about human physiology because no one was allowed to cut open dead people. That was considered sacrilegious, and you just didn't do it. And now we do it on a regular basis. And even then.
In fact, it's almost a legal requirement.
Actually, any physician being trained needs to do work on a cadaver. Absolutely.
Oh, I mean that. I mean, you know, people who die, autopsies are done all the time.
Autopsies are done
to see why someone died.
If there are suspicious circumstances. And I think
and
there are people
parts are
that
taken out.
They object to that. But my view is, even if you're religious and you believe there is some greater calling for you after this, even those people believe that your body is just a bunch of organic stuff.
I don't think it's religious. I think it might have some religious support. Mm-hmm. But I think that someone who, I think an atheist or even an agnostic could have a problem with being cut open.
They might. For example, medical schools go to great pains to make sure that cadavers are treated in a respectful manner. And every once in a while, you have some fraternity that breaks into the medical school and steals a cadaver. There was some incident a number of years ago where they grabbed some, threw them in a pickup truck, and a couple of them fell out the back, and they were spilling all over
the
place.
I got to tell you, that's when
And if
when
it's
I
your
hope,
uncle,
no, no, that's
you're
when I
not
hope
happy.
Gypsy curses are real. You know, okay. I want somebody to go all thinner on those guys.
Okay.
And you know, stroke a gnarled finger down the side of their face, and so they die 6 weeks later.
But I think it's very valuable. That, so I thought about donating my body to science. My wife wouldn't let me, though. I got to look into that again.
You know, you still have a chance.
Yeah, I do. I do. But I mean, I just don't give a crap. My wife and I will very likely be cremated. And, you know, pour your remains, you know, near Cape Cod or someplace that you remember fondly. And if you want to remember that person, you go to the beach and you say, you know, I just.
Or just eat a fish a few years later.
Eat a fish and say, yeah, it could have come from Cape Cod. But yeah, I just, so for me, and this is true, culturally, there was this little boy that was killed in Italy, it was probably 10, 15 years ago, maybe 20. And while his parents were on vacation, some thieves accosted them and then chased them, and then they shot at the car and they hit this small child. And the little boy donated all his organs, as I would do if my child died or my spouse died, or me. I'm an organ donor. I'm like, take it all. And funeral homes are very good at that. You know, if they take your cornea or this, you know, they'll put little implants in under your eyeball so it all looks very natural. Let's face it. When you're old and you die, funeral homes make you look much better than you actually did, right? I mean, my grandfather was in his 80s, and he was old. He was wrinkled. And he looked fabulous in that coffin.
I don't think I've ever been to a viewing.
But I think Bill Cosby, there was one, how did he look? He looked fabulous. Really? Well, I'm Catholic. We're big on the wake thing, which is really kind of barbaric.
I'm trying to. hey, the barbarians.
But some people like it.
The barbarians understood some things.
If you haven't seen them in 10 years, you get to see them. And like I said, my grandfather looked good.
You got to have a reason to get drunk.
It also provides that as well.
I don't anymore. I'm not drinking.
But yeah, so some people think this.
Because of the liver, Pete.
Is an invasion of the natural order of things. But it will continue. We will continue to come up with different diagnostic procedures that may be life prolonging, and they will have dumbass interfaces to how they're actually practiced. Yeah, it's not good. I mean, think about a gynecologist, right?
No,
it's
no,
very invasive.
Don't when I start laughing at something stupid you say. Don't then throw gynecologist into the middle of
Sorry,
my laugh. So
but
it
I
makes
was saying
me
that
sound like an asshole.
I was saying that very seriously.
What you said, it's not good. That was funny.
No, but even then,
now you can talk about gynecology.
There's jokes you can tell about gynecology, and there's a joke all my female comedian friends tell me, and I ran this by my colleagues, many of whom were women, at this meeting on college housing and things like that. I know, I keep bumping the microphone.
You're killing me.
So what does it sound like? Does it sound like, yeah, no, 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 when I hit it? And that was why women hide their undergarments when they're in the gynecologist's office. You're basically in this gown and you're about as exposed as you can be, but you're still hiding your underwear because perhaps he or she, whoever your gynecologist is, does not approve of the floral print you chose.
There is ritual and there is tradition and there is also intent to stuff like that.
Okay. And what would be the ritual, tradition, and intent to hiding your undergarments in the gynecologist?
Well, staying as clothed as possible, right?
That's important. I understand that, yeah.
And also, like when I went to get my liver ultrasounded, I did not strip naked and get up on the table.
Right.
Right? Even though I was in a private room and some part of me was about to be naked, right?
Right, but you get to cover your junk still, is what you're saying.
I do. Okay. I do, but what if they were ultrasounding my nuts?
Do they ultrasound your testicles?
Probably don't. No, they wouldn't do that.
But a urologist will literally grope them.
Yeah.
So I had an issue with that.
I've had examinations. I'm not going to just strip naked and stalk around like Sam Rockwell in Confessions.
Yeah, they
of
try to get
mind.
You to strip to the degree that you need
selectively.
To. Selectively. Right. So with guys, it's pretty easy. You can strip down to your boxer shorts, and then he'll ask you to lower them for either the hernia test and or the prostate exam.
And put them right back up.
Yeah.
But also, your underwear has nothing to do with the doctor.
Right.
So you hide your underwear. Your private parts might have something to do with the doctor.
So guys have to show their underwear is what you're saying. So it's actually more traumatic for us.
Wow. I abdicate any connection or responsibility for what Pete just said.
I mean that as a joke. I guess guys don't really care.
I think it's exactly as traumatic for us, and we do it a lot less. So.
And I have either bizarrely patterned boxer shorts, or I'm a big boxer brief fan. It's the hybrid of the underwear world.
I will know that I have crossed another line in my age when I start wearing boxer briefs.
Really?
It seems to be the thing that men in their mid-40s start saying, oh, I love the boxer brief.
But I got into the boxer briefs because my wife and I, you know, we went through some infertility issues. Mm-hmm. And then so they want you to wear boxers to keep the boys reasonably cool because that's best for sperm production. But many of us like the security of the brief. So the boxer brief is the best combination. You get room and then you get security. It's literally nothing. It's like composite materials. You take the best of both worlds and combine them. It's an engineering design principle. It's principle number 40 on the Russian TRIZ method for designing things. And that method 40 is composite materials, where you combine two things. There's probably another principle before that where you combine two things in another way. But that's... they were designed. That's all I'm saying.
This conversation is very indicative of the futility of trying to come to a conclusion about a question that you have.
Well, because I'm dying because I can't eat today, and all I've had was two things of orange Jell-O and a Mountain Dew. I'm bitter and angry, and I'm taking it out on you and the audience.
The Mountain Dew is probably not good for you. No, I was struck by this. This thought, you know, of being the object of scientific examination,
right,
and how you could make that comparison. But that's all I got. That's as far as I got. I don't have anywhere else to go with that.
But I guess it highlights the need for physicians and those that work in medical offices to explain the relative risk-benefit ratio of the procedure and the test and what it tells us versus the manner in which it needs to be applied.
Are scientists required to do that with things they do to stuff that is not us?
Where they are applied, they are required to fill out a plan to make sure that it's done humanely and consistently, but they are not required to explain it to the laboratory rat. And this is the thing.
I just had a beautiful image. Guy in a clipboard. Leaning down and whispering very carefully. And of course, you can
ask. It's going to hurt you a lot more than it hurts me.
You can ask that the experiment stop at any time, of course, if you can learn to speak.
But scientists are not good at that. They're not good at that in general. They don't do that when they just talk about science. They certainly don't do that when they talk about an invasive procedure you're going to get as a result of a development in medical science. And this is our drawback. We need to learn to do that better. And this weekend, I saw an excellent example of this at this. I went to a conference for the Association of College and University Housing Officers International. And I can make fun of them all I want by saying, oh, they're very nurturing, they're very touchy-feely, and things like that. Sometimes they might go overboard a little bit on that. I'll give you that. But scientists don't do any of it at all. And the optimum lies somewhere in between, and it's certainly more toward the housing folks and other people that know how to talk to human beings than it is with scientists and engineers. This is a common theme. We've talked about it many times before. We're like, here's the math. It speaks for itself. Now go home. You just can't do that. You have to get people on your side. And to them, it seems inefficient and a waste for people to do that. But trust me, the nation of France did it to get people to understand why nuclear power was a good thing for the energy future of that country, and it really helped them out.
I agree with everything you're saying, but I have to ask, isn't it the Republic of France?
I'm not going to split hairs. Like, you have any.
Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.